Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Hello, everybody. It's Kathy here, and I've got a wonderful conversation ahead of me. I'm really, really looking forward to chatting with Emily Hales. Emily's a physio, and she describes herself as the founder of Move and Play Pediatric Therapy. And this is, fair to say, a really fast-growing allied health business in Mackay in Queensland, Australia. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. So I've got the brief that there's no-go topics, and it's pretty much the open book, the unplugged conversation.
Yeah.
Take us back to those moments when you thought, right, I'm going to do it myself.
Sure. I guess I had had some idea about working privately when I was in my previous position, which was not a private position. Because I guess I knew, interestingly, I knew that NDIS was rolling out, and I knew that the type of work that I wanted to do was potentially not going to be covered by my previous role. So it was kind of an idea I had in the back of my head, but I guess I didn't anticipate that I would enter the private world so quickly. So what had happened is I went on mat leave, and then I wanted to go back part-time, except that was not really a possibility with my previous employer. So I chose to try my hand at private practice.
Yeah. I need to do some stats. A lot of private practices have been hatched on mat leave.
Yeah, I can imagine they would be.
Yeah.
Kind of disappointingly so in some circumstances, but, you know, it could give you flexibility to do life how you want to, I guess.
Yep. So what did you think being self-employed would be like back then? Baby in one hand, toasted sandwich in another. What did you think private practice would feel like?
To be honest, I had no idea. I'd never worked in private practice before. I'd maybe done a placement as a student, but that was about the extent of my experience. I had hoped it would be flexible, and I guess because I'm my own boss, so that was my own plan. And I had hoped it would be rewarding, and I can say that I feel like those two things are definitely the case for my experience. But yeah, I was pretty green, you could say.
And what was that first year like? Because you're a new mum and a new business owner, you sort of had two babies.
Yeah. It was okay. I guess I originally started out being a mobile service, and it was just me. And I started with just one day a week. I was lucky enough that I'd lived in Mackay for probably 10, 11 years. Prior to going on maternity leave, so I knew the landscape, I knew the community, I knew people who to contact to start getting referrals. So it was okay, and I used that to my advantage to get my name out there and to start seeing some clients. And it just gradually grew. So I started off one day a week, and then I found that being available only one day a week meant that I couldn't see some clients. You know, parents might have worked on that one day that I worked, and therefore they couldn't bring their kids. So I then did 2 days a week, split across the week so that it was catching kind of beginning and end of the week work rosters. Then I grew to 3 days a week, and then I brought on my first employee about not quite a year later, I think it was.
So when was this? When was this start?
Oh, so I started the business in I had my first client October 2015, and then I brought my employee on in August 2016.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
And what was the trigger for bringing in a teammate? Other than exhaustion, perhaps?
Yeah, probably probably two things. One was that the caseload was growing. And then the second thing was I knew I needed, not needed, I wanted to have a second child. So I knew that I needed to not, to have someone who could help me out if I was going to have another baby. Yeah. So it was, and it was also a little bit fortuitous that a physio who had some experience and had a very similar mindset to me had moved to town, and so I made contact with them, and we, I guess, connected on a clinical philosophical perspective, and then yeah, we just started out, and I guess that physio came on one day a week to start with because she had another job. So it was a nice slow build of, you know, caseload and more staff.
What was it like having another physio in the business?
It was great because I had someone to talk to.
It's kind of lonely, hey?
Yeah, and I actually really enjoyed teaching. So she was at the time less experienced than me, and I really enjoyed kind of building her skills and helping her to grow as a therapist. I enjoyed it, definitely.
Yeah. So fast track us now to 2019. Mm-hmm. Who's in the business now?
So I now have three physios, two full-time, one is part-time. I have two part-time OTs. I have two administration staff. One's I call my senior admin and one's my junior. And then me. And I'm not seeing – I don't have any caseload of my own. I mentor my staff. I do joint sessions with my staff. I might see some complex patients, but never with the view that they're going to become my patient. They're always going to be seen by my staff, essentially because I'm only working 3 days a week and I don't have time to do a very good job clinically. So my role is to kind of do that initial assessment, provide the support to my staff to then continue on with managing that client in an ongoing way.
Yeah. What you've achieved in becoming what I describe as team facing is something that many, many allied health business owners wrestle with for years.
Yep.
How did that happen kind of in your thinking?
I had a baby.
Okay, that will do it.
Yeah, yeah. So I fell pregnant. I asked my, at the time, one day a week physio whether she wanted more work, and she did. So essentially what happened is I handed the patients over to her. I had another team member who's since moved away join us, and I went on maternity leave and had a baby, and therefore literally physically could not see patients. Mm-hmm. So it was a catalyst for making that happen.
Do you miss it?
No, because I feel like I get enough out of mentoring, doing joint sessions with my staff. I still have that clinical flavor to my work. I still get to do lots of clinical reasoning, lots of problem solving, lots of, you know, working with the team, but I don't miss the one-to-one therapy. Part of that is because I don't actually have time for it. And I don't feel like I'm doing a bad job. If I see patients, and this has happened previously, if I see patients, I don't do a very good job following up on the things I need to do because I don't have time. I have all of these other things in my plate that I need to try and do, and so I end up being a really crap ongoing therapist. Whereas my therapists do a really good job of that, and I still get that clinical kind of flavour to what I do.
Yeah, I'm sure you're not crap.
No. I don't feel like I do it in a timely way, the way I would otherwise do if I wasn't the owner.
Yeah. So working 3 days a week, mm-hmm. and I happen to know that you've got not all of your team are in the one office. You've got you're managing a remote team. So we'll get to that. Actually, let's talk about the remote team first.
Yeah, sure.
How did that happen?
There was too much work for me. I found myself being a bottleneck for lots of things happening within the service and the team. So I actually brought in a virtual assistant who I'm very grateful that she's a local person, but she's not part of my my employees. But I brought her on initially thinking she was going to help my admin girls. And then through our first meeting talking with her and my admin girls, I realised that I'm the one who needs the help and not my admin girls. And so she's now become kind of like a personal assistant to me, essentially, doing jobs that take a bit of to-ing and fro-ing, like trying to find a space to rent in some of our outreach locations, booking rooms for workshops, finding furniture to rent for some of these workshops, like just this stuff I wouldn't otherwise get a good chance to do.
I'd love to make the statement on the record, and this will be interesting, I'd love to see what people think, hear what people think, is that every working mum needs a PA.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
Let's start that campaign right now.
Yeah, and a cleaner.
Yeah, oh gosh, yes.
So, yeah, in the end, she's doing that sort of work for me, but she's also kind of managing my social media as well and my newsletter. So I write the blog post. She then gets the image, puts it into the website, puts it onto all of the social media platforms, and then that content is then used fortnightly for a newsletter out to our newsletter list.
Yeah. Perfect tasks for a virtual assistant because your admin and front of house guys are probably super busy doing other customer service related things, which is probably their forte anyway.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I'd much prefer they spent their time on too, because it makes the biggest impact to the client's experience of this.
So your OTs are they pop in, but they're kind of based elsewhere, hey?
I've got one who's based in the Whitsundays, which is about an hour and 30, 40 minutes north of here. She comes down to the clinic once a week because that allows her to be part of our team. She gets to see some of our shared clients that we see already, and then she gets to be face-to-face with each of us and have, you know, general clinic conversations with each of us. And then I have an OT who just started this week, actually, who is going to be based in Mackay. So she'll work out of the clinic 2 days a week.
Yeah. So how are you gluing all the team together, given that there's some part-timers and some people that are off-site? What are your tips around that? Zoom?
Yeah, Zoom. Thank you, Kathy. I guess with my OT who's working out in the Whitsundays, I thought really carefully about how to make sure she felt part of the team, because I didn't want her to feel like she was basically running her own business external to us. So we talked about doing a day in the clinic, and then I shuffled our timetables a little bit to make sure that our team mentoring sessions fell on the day she's in the clinic. Then I'm also doing mentoring with her over Zoom. At the moment, that's once a week. And then now that I've got this OT based in Mackay starting, who's got a bit more experience, I'll also get her to do some mentoring with the OT in the Whitsundays. So that way they can develop a support network between each other.
Yeah.
So that's sort of, I guess she did her orientation in Mackay with the team, so that helped her. For her to get to know each of us who, you know, she otherwise would speak to over the phone.
Yeah, sounds great. Sounds great. Off to a flying start on that front. I've scribbled down in my notes that you work in on the business 3 days a week. What? Oh, more than that, hey? Okay.
It probably works out to be a little bit more.
With those couple of sneaky evenings.
Yeah,
those sneaky evenings. What gets done in your 3 days?
So Mondays I try to keep for me working on the business. So I do that from home as much as I possibly can, because I essentially get too distracted when I'm at the clinic. There's too many questions being asked of me. So in that time I do some business development work, like trying to develop new programs, looking at some marketing. I've been working on developing, I guess, some IP around how families can support their child with developmental delays or disabilities. So that can be used, I guess, to educate families as a first point, but then also potentially prime them to our approach to doing therapy, and that therapy is more than just a one-to-one therapy, and there's more to life than learning to walk or learning to talk. There's that kids need to be kids as well as, you know, achieve their outcomes that are possible.
Yeah, fun needs to happen for those kiddos, doesn't it?
And then, yeah, the other 2 days I am at the clinic, and I have training sessions with my junior staff. I have mentoring sessions with the whole team. I catch up with my admin girls, and then I do some work from the clinic, whether that be joint sessions or some work, I guess, for me behind the computer doing some work that's contributing to the business as well.
Yeah. And just remind me, have you written a book lately?
I am writing a book.
Oh, it's written. Come on.
It's I've got my first manuscript, yes. And I've sent that off to the editor for a developmental edit, and I'm feeling much more confident about the book today. Yeah, I'm writing a book on that framework for families to understand how to I guess to give them a foundation level of knowledge so that when they start or they are on their journey of helping their child to develop to be as happy and as healthy as they possibly can be, that they have an understanding of all of the parts that go towards that end goal.
Yeah. Do you have a working title for it?
It's something like
we can workshop that now. Yeah, no one's listening.
It's something like the happy, healthy and thriving, the brave framework for helping your child to lead their best life, something like that. Yeah.
Cool. Good, good, good.
Yeah.
Good, good, good. You'll have to keep us up to date in terms of when it's released, because we'll update the show notes so people can find it.
If I put it on the podcast, my planned release date is the 6th of October, which is
gone public on 6th of October, CP Day.
So
yeah.
Now that everyone who's listening knows, I'm committed to that.
Yeah, yeah. That can happen. That's perfect timing. Perfect timing. So you really rock out those 3 days, and then there's some other kind of work as well. So it can be done.
It can be done. I think part of what helped me to get to this point is I think it was maybe a year and a half ago, I started to do a program for physio clinic practice owners run by a fellow physio who's done some work in this area. And one of the activities that he got us to do was to look at what our values are, so our personal values, and then also our professional values. And what that really has done for me is that I was able to identify that my family is my biggest priority in life. And that for a while there, that got a bit lost with trying to make the business run. And I felt like I was doing not a particularly good job at either. And so when I did this values exercise, I was like, okay, this is going to guide all of my decisions from here on in terms of the decisions I make with the business. And as an example of that is my daughter started kindy this year, and I was trying to weigh up the options of either sending her to a standard kindy where they do the short hours, you know, 8:30 to 2:30 kind of thing, or whether I kept her at her long daycare centre because that would give me more hours to work on the business. But when I thought about what my values were, I was like, do you know what? The whole point of me going into business was to have flexibility to be there for my kids after school hours. So that really helped me to make a decision that I was going to do kindy hours this year, the shortened kindy hours, and I am loving it. it's shorter hours, but I feel so much happier in myself that I'm able to pick up my daughter from kindy, that we spend the afternoon together, pick up my son from daycare after that. Like, it was the best thing I could have done.
Wow. Kudos to you for sticking out that decision-making framework, because I often hear from business owners that they get sucked into it, and that the financial enticement and the reputation enticement and a few other bits and pieces, pretty much, some of the ego sort of stuff, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, and what I've learned is there's always things you can do on your business. Like, I have a never-ending to-do list, but I've learned to delegate, obviously, and I've learned to prioritize what it is that I can do versus what it is that is possible, and then also to recognize when I need to make decisions that is in line with my values, because if I don't do that, I feel like I'm compromising something. So, it's been a hugely valuable lesson for me.
Yeah. What else has your business taught you over the last few years?
That's a good one. I guess some of the lessons, it's necessarily taught me, but some of the lessons I've learned is that not everyone is my ideal customer, and that's okay. I don't have to fix everyone. I just have to fix the people who can identify that there's value in what I do, or that my team does. Mm. And I think I've learned to value that as well. So, not obviously when you come into private practice, I originally, never having worked, no one has ever had to pay for my services prior to my very first day of seeing someone in private practice. So telling someone what my hourly rate was took a long time to get used to. But now I just say this is what my hourly rate is, and I am worth that value.
Yeah. Has business private practice taught you anything else?
I guess the other thing is that I'm probably a better leader than I thought I was. I can use my natural personality to lead how I want to lead as well. So I'm, like you said at the beginning, I'm an open book. I am usually very open with sharing things with my team. Both personally, professionally, and from a business point of view. And I think I've learned to, as part of that learning to delegate, I've learned to trust that they can do a really good job at things as well.
Yeah. Oh, sounds incredible. So I'm imagining your team, not even imagining, I'm just completely convinced that your team are really high performing, pretty energetic, pretty glued, cohesive sort of team.
Yeah.
How would you describe your team?
I would agree. I think they're all pretty high performing. I think they all have high expectations of themselves, and so they expect a lot of themselves, which is, it is great, because they will do their very best they can. It has taught me to also teach them that you need to do what's possible, or what you can, not what is absolutely possible. Mm. But I guess on that team front, I've been really careful with who I employ. Because we're still a small team, it's obviously growing, but it's still a small team. And if I were to employ someone who did have a different work ethic or a different attitude, that would be difficult to manage. So I have been really careful with trying to employ people who, fit our culture, and that work ethic pretty well.
Mm. Within your team, do you have senior and junior clinicians? Are you sort of building out a leadership team?
Yes. I've got a senior physio and two junior physios, and then I've got a senior OT and a junior OT. Mm. Yeah. And the idea behind that is, I guess I don't want to have to be the person mentoring everyone. That's too hard in my very short amount of time available. But also, I think my clinicians have excellent experience that's possibly better than me in numerous areas, and therefore let's use that to support the people who are growing underneath them.
Yeah. Way to go. Way to go. Yeah, I'm a big fan of becoming team facing. It's just about how you can adjust all the moving parts so that you do become team facing. And if you do want a little bit of clinical work, it's there if you want it. It's not that you have to do it, or that the business is dependent on your contribution financially as well. And that, I believe, is one of the biggest secrets to not just growth, but to scale, which is growing with managing your expenses as well. Yeah.
I think as well, living in a regional area, there is no university located in, well, there is a university without allied health programs here in Mackay. And so recruiting staff is tough. And so I am a big believer that I need to look after my staff and value my staff as much as I possibly can, because it's hard to get new staff here. And I may as well keep the ones I've got because they're very good, rather than having to try and churn through new staff.
Yeah. What's amazing about working with you and working in your business?
I've never thought about that. I would say that we are, we definitely offer a specialty service, even though APRA won't let me say it's specialty.
No, we won't tell them. They're possibly not listening.
Hopefully not. We offer a really niched service. So we see children with developmental delays and disabilities, primarily children under the age of school, so under school age. And I think we're really good at what we do. And I think we see the bigger picture in terms of managing these kids from the bigger picture of their life and their family. And I think that's a really rewarding thing to be doing. I think there's a lot of, I guess, reward for us as clinicians to be really involved in these families' lives, you know, support them to just really be empowered to do the best they can for their child.
Yeah, such a privilege to be on that adventure with families.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah. What's on the whiteboard for the future of Move and Play?
I would like to, and it is on the whiteboard, I would like to release my book. Then, well, as well as that, I need a bigger premises. We've outgrown where we are, so I need a bigger space. But I would also like to explore building even more multidisciplinary practice, so looking at some speech pathology services, maybe psychology, definitely, if I can manage it, a paediatrician, ideally if I can, someone, possibly two, so one that's focused on, I guess, behavioural autism type presentations, and then one that's focused on physical rehabilitation. And then I also want a practice manager, so that is on my plan. At the moment, we don't have any space for a practice manager to sit in our clinic.
Maybe so, in the car out the front on the front
seat. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it could be interesting. But so, yeah, once I have a larger premises, a practice manager will definitely be on the cards, because, again, I would prefer to focus on managing the team, not all of the business stuff that go with the business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else that you've kind of got?
Yeah.
Because I could imagine you've got several whiteboards.
I do. I want to run some more groups. So I guess our focus is that, yes, you might start your therapy with one-to-one therapy, but the idea is that we are going to, you know, I guess, help your child to develop skills so they can integrate them into community activities. So developing groups is a stepping stone, and then also partnering with some local organisations to support them to help children with physical disabilities or other disabilities to participate in just everyday community activities. So that's on the cards. And then I would also like to start a podcast focusing on interviewing parents of children with disabilities and exploring their experiences and what they have found to help them to live a good life with their child and for, you know, help their child to live a good life. And I may also potentially interview adults with disabilities to understand their experience of childhood so that, you know, what was it about their childhood that enabled them to become successful adults, happy adults now.
Love the idea of the podcast. Is there anything in Australia like it?
Not in Australia. I did just do a search only on the weekend to see what else was around.
Yeah.
And not in Australia. There's a couple of American ones, but nothing in Australia that I could see.
Ooh, that's exciting, particularly paired with the book, hey? That's a great combo.
Yeah, because parents often talk about how they feel isolated, especially when they first have that diagnosis, and sometimes parents aren't ready at that point to go to, you know, a local family parent group. So the podcast is kind of a way that they can understand that there are other parents out there, other parents have done this before or are doing this right now, learn from them, but then also potentially develop confidence to try and network with other parents and build their own support group of people.
Yeah, wow, that's neat. Really, yeah. Really neat. Well, that sounds like a pretty bright future.
Yeah, a busy future, yeah. But I feel like
long days.
Yeah, I'm excited though, because I guess I've always thought that what we offer to parents is more than that therapy, you know. Families need more than just going to a physio or going to an OT and learning those skills. They need support as a family. They need to feel empowered as a family. They need education. And I really want part of our service to be that, to provide that to families.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys, you've got the NDIS in play already.
Sure do, yes.
I didn't hear that in your future, but I'm pretty sure it will be.
It will be, yeah.
Really quickly, what are your thoughts?
I think the idea is good. I think there is. I think the idea is promising. I think it's yet to be implemented. I've tried to be patient because it is still new, and I feel like someone's described it before as a plane being built as it's taken off. It might have even been you, Kathy. I don't remember. But yeah, it definitely feels like a plane that's being built as it's taking off. So it's hard to really give a definitive assessment of the NDIS because I feel like it's constantly changing. Hopefully for the better, and in most circumstances I feel like it's most of the changes have been for the better, and any changes that they suggested, like tiered pricing, that was never going to be for the better. The backlash from the professional organisations and individual businesses has been pretty strong, and that's really put a halt on any of those sorts of ideas. So I feel like they're at least prepared to listen to feedback. Yeah,
a little bit of a change of tone in the last 2 years.
Definitely. I do think that despite the fact that there is definitely still challenges, I feel like that the access to services has definitely increased as a result of the NDIS, particularly for children under the age of 7. I guess that's the cohort we work with. So that's what I've seen the most of. But there are some of these kids who would have had hardly any therapy or none at all, and they're actually receiving services, which is a big improvement to what it was.
Yeah, agree. I was talking to someone about it a little while back, and we sort of described it a bit as a toddler. It's in its toddler phase.
Yeah, that's
wobbly legs and a bit irritable and pretty patchy, inconsistent, sleep deprived. And, you know, we can sort of hope developmentally that childhood then is pretty smooth and there could be some adolescent hiccups. We don't know.
The thing I would really like to see improved is that onboarding process, for want of a better word. I would really love to see it focused on opportunities as opposed to deficits. But it's actually a really demoralizing period for the families to go through. And to be honest, it's pretty demoralizing as a therapist to sort of write a report for the NDIS focusing on the deficits. It's not a nice thing to do.
Yeah, because clinically so many of us have evolved from that and have a very positive, you know, this is where you're at. It's not a big deal. We'll work from there.
Exactly.
So it's been very much a back to the future kind of piece with having to write to it. They wouldn't think of it as a deficit model, but we know it as that because we've sort of seen all that so long ago. So
And even for the parents, I can only imagine that going through that process kind of zaps their hope, and to every year have to go through the same process of talking about how difficult their life is with their child. Like that's awful to have to do annually just to prove that you need supports. I would much prefer that they were able to talk about the opportunities that the child might be able to achieve through the supports that they get funded, as opposed to explaining how difficult life is. Yeah.
Was that part of the impetus for writing your book?
Probably, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think it was also some of the not really frustrations, but sort of challenging situations you find yourself in as a therapist when families get stuck on specific things. So an example is some families get really focused on wanting their child to learn to walk when, based on my experience of having worked with lots of children with that particular child's presentation or diagnosis, I know that it's really important for that child to learn to use their voice, whether that be their vocal voice or an alternative voice, because that's what's going to give them independence. And so I guess it's around providing a framework for families to understand the breadth of their child's needs across all areas of all areas of development, so that they can see that bigger picture, that they don't get stuck on trying to fix something that maybe won't be fixed or that is not important in terms of the child's overall potential independence, but then also their child's overall level development of their own self-identity and feeling good about themselves and understanding who they are as a person outside of their disability. That's probably what has kind of prompted me, is I'd love for parents to understand that stuff earlier rather than when they're a teenager or an adult.
Yeah, and set them up for the best possible start.
Yeah. You
know, really solid team around them and, opportunity to ask any question anytime.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to change tack a little bit. There's a question, and I haven't asked it for ages, and that's the question about what you would do if you won, no questions asked, $50,000.
Yep.
What would you do with it on for the business?
I would use it to fit out a new premises. Yeah.
You've got to get the new premises first.
Just I do.
Small technicality.
I have a place in mind that I'm sort of I guess biding my time on a little bit. It's been vacant for a while, but it's probably the place that I want to move into. Fit out costs are highly expensive, so if I could not do the fit out, that would be
that financial reality of moving to a bigger premise.
Well planned.
So your 50K is going on beautiful fit out, beautiful parent facilities, gorgeous rooms.
Yeah. It'd make the place that I'm looking at disability accessible, which is really important and very difficult to find in our community. And the thing that probably excites me the most about this space is obviously it's got clinical rooms. That's that's great, but that we have that where we are. But it's got this really big 50-metre square room at the back, which would be amazing, yeah. So I would run groups there, workshops, workshops for parents, workshops for therapists. It just would open up lots of opportunities for what we could do in that space. I'm pretty keen on this space. I just have to financially make sure I can afford it.
Yeah, better to be cautious now than devastated later when it's real kind of stretch. Oh,
yeah.
Love it, love it, love it. I can see a lot of IKEA flat packs in your future.
Yes, yes.
Many a private practice has IKEA to thank, mostly thank.
Yeah, and a flat pack party to flat pack party. Help you put it together.
Oh, gosh. Now, many of my guests on here have the chance to ask me a question. Is there anything you want to ask me?
Yeah, my question is how do you figure out how big you want to go in terms of the size of your practice?
What a ripper.
Yeah, I know.
There's so many ways to answer that, and I would suggest that the answer changes over time.
Yeah.
So what I get a little concerned about is when people are answering that question from a real kind of anxiety, I can't do it mindset.
Yeah.
And that really provides a context of quite limited self-beliefs and quite limited beliefs in your opportunities and your value and all of those sorts of things. So whenever business owners make that decision, it's in the context of their now. And it's a really good question to be revisiting every 6 to 12 months. What if I had no fear? What would I do? What if money wasn't an objection? What would I do? What if our customers ran this business? What would they want? And so it's really interesting to bring in these questions that are outside of your own kind of nervousness sometimes or limited beliefs, and to sort of just keep asking, what is the vision that I have for my clients? What's the vision I have for myself and my family? What's the vision I have for my business? And sort of just ask it hypothetically without any of those barriers there. How's that as an answer? Is that remotely helpful?
Yeah, I think it's, yes, yeah, it's sort of what I've been thinking about myself. And I like that idea of asking it in a regular pattern because, you know, if you'd asked me a couple of years ago whether I'd have a team of 5 clinicians and 2 admin, I would have thought it would be mad, but it's happened and it's actually really manageable given my limited hours. I guess my anxiety, like you talk about, is I don't want to grow so big that it takes my time away from my family. Mm-hmm. But I guess if I can structure the way that I grow to suit that need, then
yeah,
the sky's the limit, yeah.
Yeah. What do I need to have a FTE of 10? Who do I need to be to lead a team of 15 FTE?
Yeah.
And it's not always the question of where the finish line is. It's the question of what does the business need to look like? What does the team need to be? Who do you need to be to make that good stuff happen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa. Well, keep asking yourself that question because I want to hear the answer to that one.
Yes. It sounds like it might be changing.
Yeah, and it should be changing because as you, think of the structure we have with our learner drivers. We've got L's and then red P's and then green P's. And, running a business is sort of similar. I think there's about 25 more P's after it. But really, really nervous and tentative or you're a bit overconfident in those early days, depending on your temperament. Then you kind of get the hang of it and you read the traffic and you think you're getting the hang of it. And then you get more hours under your belt and more road conditions and near misses, if you like, hopefully not too many. And then your green peas, you're kind of settling into some rhythm and you can get a lot of habits and you can also get complacent at that point as well. And some business owners, as I meet them, settle for the good enough business. Mm. Whereas I come in with my my eyes and sort of think, guys, you can be making such a bigger impact. It's there for you if you want it. And it comes back to, I guess, how much you want it.
Yeah, yeah.
And how you can make it happen.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Cool. Anything else you'd love to add in? Any tips or any secret sauce?
No, I think, like I said before, I think my biggest learning and the most powerful tool I've had in the past 18 months has been understanding what's important to me.
Yeah.
And that's really helped me to feel like I'm doing the right thing by me in terms of running a business instead of, I guess, the business running me.
Absolutely love it. We are just going to leave it on that. That's magic. Thank you so much for sharing your business story, Emily. And get back in touch when you're ready to release your book. Really happy to support you with that one.
I will. Thanks, Kathy.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues. The Private Practice Made Perfect podcast is brought to you by Experts on Air Podcast Network.